Okay, I'm gonna mute this.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the GCSD August 11th, 2020 regular board meeting for the month of August. And if we could all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, we will start with first, real quick, members of the public, you're welcome. You are welcome to join us in this meeting. Please email any comments you have and they will be read aloud during public comment. Or if you're dialed in and wish to speak, you're more than welcome to, and we will call upon public comments after all of the items are presented. During the teleconference meetings, roll call and votes will be called by the Board Secretary, Jennifer Flores. So if you would like to do that, Jennifer.
Hey, Director Krakowski.
Present.
Director Mora.
Present.
Director Armstrong.
Present.
Director Edwards.
Present.
Director Swan. Present.
Here.
All directors are present.
Okay, first off, we'd like to approve the order of the agenda. Any directors have any comments, or are we ready to make a motion on this?
I move that we approve the agenda.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Okay. It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards to approve the order of the agenda. I will now call for the vote. Director Krakowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously to approve the order of the agenda.
Okay, we'll open the floor for public comment. Are there any members of the public that have joined us today, or Jennifer, any emails?
I have not received any emails, and there are no comments in the chat either.
Okay. Item number three, information items. We'll start with staff reports, fire department, and we have Chief Andrew Murphy with us this morning.
Good morning. I have a new device. I hope everybody can hear me okay.
Yes. Sounds good.
Yeah, very well.
Perfect. Morning, Chief.
Good morning. Again, my name is Andrew Murphy, Assistant Chief. I wanted to go over the monthly report. As it says in the very beginning, there were no significant events, which means every event, of course, was significant for the person experiencing the emergency, but there wasn't anything that really stood out as far as fires or severe accidents or significant events. All of the equipment is in service. Speaking of the apparatus, the fire engine that the district purchased for $8,000, the surplus CAL FIRE engine is almost ready. Had the decals made and put on with a new decal with the CSD on the Groveland part of the stack patch. And then now we're working on getting the radios moved over from the old engine 788 into the new old engine 783. And that hopefully will be occurring within the next week or so. Meanwhile, the engine 788 has been used by CAL FIRE as the fire activities increased through the fire season, and it was leased through the assistance by hire agreement for several days down at baseline conservation camp as a standby engine. One thing with that, and that's probably what that engine is used most for at this point, is when the CAL FIRE has a reserve fire engine at baseline camp, they're required to have a fire engine because it's a prison, basically, the work camp. And the state fire marshal requires a fire engine. So when CAL FIRE uses their reserve engine that's stationed in there, they will either utilize the Groveland district engine or the county fire engine to try to share and make sure it's spread out. So it has been used quite frequently through the past and was used in July. I don't have the hours number. They're still working on the pay documents. Other things occurred, 56 incidents this month, 54 were in the district, 2 were in the county area. Again, we're seeing no fires. There was a couple of emergency incidents that could have occurred or could have caused a fire, but those were mitigated. The two defensible space inspectors that the district hired through the California Fire Foundation grant have been very busy. They started in June, and they've conducted in July, they conducted 404 inspections. These are the 100-foot inspections around residences in the district. We figure they've got probably another month or so left on the grant funds before their time with us is completed. A couple other things, through a grant through the county OES, from Cal OES, it's a terrorism-related grant, funds that are decided every year. There's a group of the county fire chief, city fire, county sheriff, city police chief, and the public health department allocate a grant every year. In 2017, we had a little bit of funds left over. So the district, all the districts were able to get one of the new CAL FIRE, it's not a CAL FIRE radio, but it's the same radio that CAL FIRE uses. And the amount, approximately $1,900 worth for a handheld radio, 2,000 channel radio for the crews to use. CAL FIRE switched to them about 2 years ago. It's a P150 radio. And they're pretty nice. So that's the other thing as part of the grant, the Assistance for Firefighters grant that the district with the county put in for earlier this year would be to replace the current radios that we have, all the mobile and handheld radios. So we hope to hear, they're saying midsummer 2020, which is right now. So hopefully we hear pretty quick on that. And I just got word yesterday, and I haven't let Mr. Campa know, but surprise for everybody, we did get awarded the CAL FIRE Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant, approximately $1,100 for some wildland tools, and I'll be forwarding that information today. That's right. And unless you have any questions, that's the end of my report.
I have one question, Andy. So it looks like about 45% of the inspections ended up non-compliant. Other than the fact that that's kind of bad news to start with, what happens now as regard?
So they'll be given a notice of what needs to be fixed. It could be a dead tree next to a house. It could be they haven't done anything. There's all kinds of different scenarios, and then they'll be given a time frame for a reinspection, say 30 days, maybe 2 weeks, depending on what it is. And then the inspectors, either these inspectors or the CAL FIRE inspectors, will go and reinspect. If they're still non-compliant, the violations will get forwarded up to the CAL FIRE Prevention Bureau. At which point a law enforcement officer, one of the CAL FIRE peace officers, law enforcement officers, will make contact with them and urge them to comply for fear of, a fee or a fine. But pretty good compliance usually.
Any other questions, comments from the directors?
Nancy's trying to speak.
Oh, yes, Nancy.
There we go.
Can I comment on how fabulous the paint job looks at the firehouse?
Yes.
That slat that was never painted, I meant to stop in every day and offer to paint it because it was driving me crazy. But, and I love the color red.
John, yes.
I think it's awesome that we're getting some of these inspections done, and appreciate it. Thank you, Chief. And yeah, the firehouse looks really awesome. And traditional red doors are great.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item. Thank you very much, Chief. Nice to hear from you again. The are we doing general managers or operations, Pete?
Let's go with general managers report, because okay. I'll be pretty brief unless there are huge questions, because most of my stuff in reality is on the agenda. There's no reason for me to repeat it in a written report. The entire month, this last month, seemed to be consumed with working with the county, continuing to try to work cooperatively through the environmental impact report evaluation and comments and associated feedback from them, also with our legal team, and then working through with the county fire chiefs and the county through the review of a joint powers agreement, which would be the desired vehicle to go forward with a fire parcel tax. And that's a process in and of itself. We'll have that discussion in a bit as well. But so it's been a lot of work with the county, and appreciate Kathleen being on the call to hear this today, just because we're doing a lot of good things. The one thing that is I'm working through with Chief Murphy is the call data and trying to get more information and more accuracy in exactly where the calls occur, exactly what they are, to be able to accurately map them out, evaluate it, so that we can make management decisions about how the department functions, how we deploy equipment, how we staff, how we basically respond most efficiently to both what we're currently dealing with in within the district, and then also under our auto aid and mutual aid agreement. One thing that we will be having a discussion about and maybe look out for in the near future is a special workshop where we deal just with the fire department and our funding concerns, as well as the impacts of services provided outside the district boundaries and outside the automatic aid response boundaries. And the reason that I bring that up specifically is because there is a lot of pressure for projects to continue to move forward through approvals at the county. And there is much feedback that there is no impact to district services, to the fire department. And we may be faced with a situation where even, you know, just looking at the data and the number of responses, the board may be asked to make a decision as to whether we're going to continue to respond outside of the automatic aid boundary. It's very, very, very serious, very complicated, very concerning matter. But I have to put this out there because it's a decision that none of us take lightly, but at this point, until we get some traction with moving forward with some funding assistance, the number or the amount of time we spend outside the district boundaries, we're going to have to consider cutting back those services just for the sake of our taxpayers. And at the same time, we need to educate the taxpayers and those around us of what the implications are if that does occur. So, not to have a discussion about it because it's not an agenda item, but I just wanted to throw it out there because I think we're going to have an upcoming workshop about it. And it's a dynamic situation that I'm working through every day. So appreciate your understanding of it, and off we go.
Any questions, comments from the directors? Any public comment, Jennifer? Not anything?
Public comment.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Louie, we would like to go to you right now for the admin.
Perfect. Good morning, everybody.
Louie, you can do my report.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, I'm all over it, Jen. No. Is it my report or your report? What are we doing?
You're doing yours, Louie.
Okay. All right. First off, I want to say thank you to Janice and Nancy for throwing their name back in the hat and being on our board. I couldn't imagine losing you two key pieces to our board, and I really do appreciate that and want to say thank you. And then I guess I'll go into the bad stuff is in July, we had a sewer spill. We estimated about 7,000 gallons reached the dry creek. I did not make it to the lake or anything, but it did go into a creek that contributes to High Mountain Lake. The guys were out there around 9 o'clock until about 2 a.m. and got it cleaned up. Everything back restored back flow and all that, and found that it was a root ball that was just kind of loose and clogging the end of the manhole there on the outlet side. And so not sure exactly where it came, but it wasn't attached in the manhole, so it came from upstream. And then we actually had that camera'd after the fact. We had 7,200 feet camera'd, and we found one area looked like maybe where it came from, but no significant spots of exactly where it came from. But everything looked good for the most part. We do have some troubled areas on that 7,200 feet that we are putting a report together, and Alfonso will be seeing all those reports coming here soon, which is sags and some offsets. And we actually had a really bad offset at our lift station, which we had to have dug up and replaced because it was offset in the wrong direction where it was actually restricting flow. So that was bad news for us, but all of that's taken care of as well. We had Moyle Construction come in. They had to dig down about 8 feet next to our lift station around electrical conduits and everything, and got that thing replaced and got about 24 feet of new pipe. So but that was the bummer of that whole thing. But with that, we do a lot of maintenance as well. We cleaned 11 stations this last month, and we inspected 151 manholes. So even with all that cleaning, all that maintenance, there's stuff that's going to happen. And unfortunately, it did. But the guys are, they're out there every day doing something, looking for, problem areas and doing our maintenance as best we can. So it's just unfortunate that things happen. So,
Louie, can I add to that real quick on this particular thing? What's happening that we're seeing is that there's a huge change in occupancy of the homes where they used to be occupied on the weekends, holidays, that type of stuff. And now they seem to be occupied with, vacation rentals, Airbnbs, whatever, much more frequently than they used to be, which is putting a demand on the sewer system. So what we believe in this case, just because of the fact that our system looked to be intact and that there were no obvious places where roots were intruding, is that someone likely called a plumber because their sewer was backing up. The plumber came out. The first thing that they do is they rot it out, broke the roots loose, and those then flow down into the manhole. And they float around in the manhole until they get a gruesome solids on it. And then they sit down and go right in front of the exit of the manhole. And then it backs up from there. And there's just no way other than daily and even sometimes more than daily inspections of every single manhole to be able to find something coming from someone's lateral that you can't see and blocking the sewer. So we're working on ways to coordinate with the plumbers and Pine Mountain Lake to so that we get mandatory notice in advance of any plumbing work like that, any sewer cleaning work. Many of them do notify us, but it's a very serious matter because even if the plumber does it or a homeowner does it, we're still responsible under state law and regulations. So it's a difficult exercise. So I really appreciate Louie and the whole crew for doing what they do on this.
Really, really quick, isn't the homeowner responsible for the lateral from their home to the
sewer line? They are. But there's how do you determine where someone cut it loose?
Right.
Flow into the manhole. Many times the company will come out, and when they cut it, it'll bind up in their jaws, and then when they pull it out, they pull it all the way out. Sometimes it just cuts loose and goes down with the flushing water, you know, and goes out into the manhole, and there's just nothing that they can't recover it. If they notice that, you know, it'd be nice if they called and said, hey, I think we broke something loose and it went into your sewer, but that takes a pretty sharp plumber to know that.
Okay. Thank you.
Back to you, Louis. Sorry.
That's all good. No, it's good stuff. Yeah, so actually there is some local plumbers that do contact us and let us know that they're going to be taking care of a problem on a homeowner's side. And we are able to go out there and actually put a basket in the manhole and wait for, you know, for them to break anything loose. But there, it's the people that come from down the hill that don't really respond to us very well on that. Yeah, other than that, we've found root balls and pieces of hose and everything inside the, you know, our manholes during inspection. So it's just things happen. So what else have we got going on? Yeah, we actually, when we were doing that 16 project, we opened the manhole to do to block it while they cut the piece out, and we found a 4-foot piece of garden hose. So it's just that we found bricks, pieces of wood. That's why we do the inspections. And yeah, it's just, I don't know how it gets in there. It's just the weirdest stuff. Sometimes cue balls,
beer bottle.
So, yeah. Anyways, what else we had at the sewer plant? We actually rebuilt the OSG unit. It's an on-site chlorine generator, and it's used to disinfect the effluent the effluent. And as of right now, I'll have a better report for you guys next month. But it seems like we're down to 1 to 2 bags of salt a day compared to 10 to 12. So we'll have a good cost estimate on that by just rebuilding that. We actually had a rep come out, look over our equipment, and they recommended what we did, and we bought the parts, put it in there, and it has saved us a ton on salt already. So it was good to have them come out and look at our equipment and recommend some stuff for us, and gave us a good list of maintenance procedures and everything to follow, which the guys were already doing pretty much. So that was good. We learned a couple things, but Greg's really excited about that. So he's going to have the report for you guys. So that's going to be good. Let me see here. And we go into the water side. We're actually got on a pretty good maintenance schedule with all of our dead end flushing. And the guys hit quite a few this last month. We did find some areas where we weren't able to actually open up the dead ends, and we were making a good list of those as well because the blow offs are froze up or just inoperable. So other than that, pretty much my report, unless you guys got some questions.
Do you I do real quick. Do you have, or do we need to get it from Greg next month, the total waste that's coming through the system this year compared to last year at this time?
Actually, I just pulled that up from my report last year, and this year it is actually more last year.
More last year, okay.
Yes, but it could be that number's taken off what is flowing into the plant, and I know Greg could have took flow up more this during July's weekend, the busy month, and he actually refrained from doing that, and he brought it up to about 85. and he said he probably could have took it up to about 120. So that could be the difference there, but.
The explanation of that is that it's the location in which we meter. It's not the flow from the system into plant storage. It's the, we meter the flow from plant storage in through the treatment plant. So it doesn't take into account, if we were measuring the elevation of the storage as well, we could do that math. And that's, a data gathering thing. That's probably a really good piece of information to have. So we would look at the flow coming into the plant plus the change in storage. So then we would actually know. But also, you don't know how much is evaporating and those kind of things.
Yeah.
From year to year. But metering on the way in would be the ideal in reality.
Thank you. Okay, that was all I had. Any other directors? Okay, any members of the public or Jennifer, any comments? Okay. Thank you very much, Louie.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to item 4, which is the consent calendar.
Actually, you skipped me.
I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm sorry, Jennifer.
It's okay.
Let me backtrack a little bit.
Actually, okay. Jen, can I make one more comment?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm looking at the build consumption from last year and this year on water-wise. Last year, we're at 9,861,716 gallons, and this year, we're 11,760,774 gallons. So we definitely had more build consumption on the water side. So that's an indication that we were a little busier on population. So anyways.
Wow, quite a bit. That's amazing. Thank you, okay. Louie.
I'm done now.
Okay, Jennifer, now it's your turn.
Okay. So for my report, for the most part, the last week was dedicated to the update of the municipal services review for LAFCO. So it's a, I'm pretty sure Bob's familiar with it, but it's a very, very, very extensive document that is anything and everything that makes GCSD, GCSD. This goes into this document, from all of our plans to our services, budget, how we operate, just anything and everything you could possibly want to know about the district. And a lot of work went into it, and I'm happy that I'm to say that it was submitted yesterday. It's a study that's done every 5 years, and the district had done an update last year, but it was kind of clunky, and the county contracted, had a consultant come in to help them with the update this time, so it was much, much more comprehensive. And we took our time and did a really detailed, thorough job with our municipal services review. I think we're going to end up posting it on the web, Pete. We haven't quite decided exactly how we wanted to, but it's just a very good document for board members, for members of the public. It's kind of like the encyclopedia of GCSD. So just completed that. We are in the process of closing the books, working with our Gilbert, our accountants and CPA. We have our audit scheduled for September 9th. So that's underway. Deb's been really busy getting everything, all the documents together for the auditors. At the board workshop, we had mentioned that we signed up or purchased the software called Laserfiche. It's this document management software that I wanted to have a little bit more of a detailed report for you to kind of explain it, but the first training we had was just a really brief kind of overview. And then Renee and I are actually scheduled for this Thursday to go into a really much more in-depth training for Laserfiche. But again, like I said, it's a document management software that will help us tremendously with records management at the district. There's a lot of really neat features that it has, especially with like quick fields, which is a function that allows you to take certain documents, like let's say, for example, a grant deed, and has this type of information, like an APN number, and you can put these fields in, and then it'll search all scanned documents and take all of those and group them. So instead of us having to kind of scan and go through and look, it's a really, really smart technology that we're really excited about. After I do the training, I'll have more to report on that. We sent over that a file tree that district management had put together of how we thought our documents should line out administration, what falls underneath that, and how documents are organized. And Seth with Laserfish has taken that and started to build that into the software to mirror what we've already done. So that's going on there with that right now. Rachel and I attended the per capita grant workshop, which was a requirement to receive the per capita grant funds. So that was a lot that we already kind of knew. I mean, it's a very intense and just, they go through a lot of the entire grant process. So like as of right now, you're mostly just interested in the beginning and all of the other detail that they get into. Was a little much for right now, but we did that. We met that requirement. So that's another check off the list for those grant funds that we're going to get in. But just specifically, you know, it's the rules, what they can be used for, lots of questions. So that was very, it was very interesting actually. And a lot of really good questions from other agencies. The other thing that Rachel and I have been working on is the update to the park master plan. Specifically the development of the park infrastructure. So for these grants that we are looking for, an important component of it is actually having a plan in place. And I know we've done a lot of research with the Grace Committee in kind of identifying things that the community is interested in. And so Rachel and I, it kind of in an unconventional way, but reached out to different consultants that were interested because we did, in order to kind of develop a scope of work, letting them know what we had done, what we were looking for. So had a good couple of meetings with some very promising consultants. So Rachel and I are finishing this very basic RFP for the master plan and plan on issuing that when she gets back from vacation. And that is the majority of all the stuff that's going on right now. Important.
Thank you, Jennifer. That's quite a bit. But thank you and everybody in the office for gathering all this stuff and doing all that you girls do up there. We appreciate it. Any comments from the directors?
Yeah, I have a comment and actually a question I want to ask Louie because I missed it on the first time through. just going to say, yes, that municipal service review, I'll be interested to see that. I mean, that's a great big document the way that is. That's good to update it. Are you still there, Louie?
Yep.
I was just curious, were you on your report, you had the GIS program, you got unit 7, unit 8, unit 9, unit 10. Does that mean that those units are done or did it mean you were working on them during that period?
No, they are completed. Did you hear me?
I could, but then it stopped.
Oh, no, those are completed units. Completed.
They're completed, Bob.
So they're complete. Okay, I'll just nod, Pete. Just, yes, that's good. You're making really good progress on that.
Yeah, the guys are knocking out of the park on that. They're getting easier and easier for them each time, so.
Good. That's good to hear.
What that does, it gives us the exact locations of hydrants and valves. And I have to assume, Louie, that they're doing all the components within that unit that we feel need to be done, need to be located.
They're just starting with the hydrants and hydrant valves to start getting their feet wet and getting that numbering system down, and then they'll start diving into all the other stuff. So
yeah, because there are many hundreds of street valves and everything else, but what this helps us do is also align the water mains on the on the final GIS system on the map, which is what the whole goal of this thing was, to have exact accurate locations so that in the event of lack of paper, when all else fails, you can go to a position on the earth and here you go. You'll know exactly where everything is. So it's really fantastic.
Jennifer, real quick, what does LAFCO do with that five-year study?
Well, they use it, I mean, they update it, and it's to kind of evaluate our services, you know, is there redundancy? Because it's a county-wide document, ours will just be one part of it. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're specifically right now, they're going to use it for the airport annexation. We won't be able to move forward with that, completing that, until the review is complete. I don't know, Pete, do you want to, is there something I missed?
It's under the state law. So if you hear anything about Cortese-Knox, that is the LAFCO laws, and they're regularly updated. But the main thing is that LAFCO's primary charge is to do these municipal service reviews for all districts every 5 years. And it is to provide them the information necessary for them to make decisions about boundaries and services. That's the core of this exercise, because it gives them the information of, is there a demand for services outside the boundaries? Do we need to look at expanding the sphere of influence or the boundaries of the district so that there's logical growth of the district versus, it's much more relevant in very urban areas where there's a lot of, where the boundaries touch up against each other and you have a lot of districts and all of a sudden somebody submits an annexation and then that affects somebody else's district. And in our case, the primary focus this time was to make sure that they had complete and accurate information about all of our infrastructure and everything that we're planning, and also the impacts of the out of area responses on the fire side, because as part of that service, LAFCO's responsible to look at that and make a determination on whether is that normal? Is that something that requires an annexation? Is it something that needs to be addressed in a different way? And that will be my focus as they go through the LAFCO process on this, to make sure that there's some degree of determination on that in the MSR, because that helps our case as far as getting assistance with funding fire. I'm kind of beating around it a little bit here, but LAFCO has an obligation to make sure that we're not impacted by growth outside of our boundaries, because it's
good.
That's what they're responsible to do. And it's also supposed to be a separate entity from the county. In other words, when the planning director or community development director serves as the executive officer for LAFCO, they're supposed to put on a different hat. So they can't, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. Many counties have actually a separate entity that is LAFCO, very much more expensive. But our county community development director is the executive officer for LAFCO, but they're supposed to be independent. So anyway, it's going to be a really interesting process, and definitely we'll keep the board aware of it. But Jennifer, staff, everybody that got involved, but Andy provided information, I did, Jennifer, Rachel, Renee, Deb, Louie, Alfonso, everybody had a piece of this project.
What coordination. Congratulations, you guys. Okay, let's. We have a comment from the public?
No comment.
Okay, good job. Thank you, guys. Okay, now we will move on to the consent calendar.
I move that we approve the consent calendar.
Well, I'll second it, but I have a question regarding the committee development. I mean, has that committee already been appointed? Because if it has, I'd like to volunteer to be on it.
I think, Pete, is that the one that Nancy and I talked about?
Yeah, I'm trying to I'm scooting there as quickly as I can without losing my place here. Okay. Yes, that is.
Or F. Okay, I think Nancy and I would like to do that.
So would I. As you can tell from the fact that I'm on the ad hoc committee.
Yes. Okay, so how do we do this, Pete?
It's the board president's discretion on committees. And it's, you know, it per our policy, it's, you know, I certainly we don't expect this or don't intend for this to be a, you know, a competition or a sensitive matter in any way. I just need to have a committee that can, you know, that's recognized because there may be some work associated with it. And this was just a process of getting a couple people appointed to that committee. And normally it's the, you know, the board president will make those appointments. And usually we don't have a competition for it. So this is a, you know, if we want to
get- usually, I'm just going to say in the past, you know, part of this is just a procedural thing. It is definitely the board president's position to make the appointment. Historically, we have normally discussed these things to find out who's interested in participating, and then before the board president makes a decision, rather than just doing it offline. I mean, I'm, at least when I was president, we did.
Okay, that makes sense. Where did my little notes go? Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Or G. Okay, so can we discuss this?
I'm willing to serve on the committee with absolutely no problems, but at the same time, Bob, if he's on ad hoc, if it makes more sense for Bob to be in it, I'm okay with that too.
This is something that I've been very concerned about for a long time, and now we're doing some stuff. And by the way, I just want to say I'm happy to see that somebody had some common sense and has decided to go for a spring special election rather than trying to stick it in November. But you know, it's not like it's the end of the world. I don't care. It's just if you just were doing it because it was somebody that was willing to participate, that's fine. But if you want to be on it, I'm not really. It is your decision, Madam President. It is. I just wanted to point out that I would also be interested in it if it was.
I think that I would like to serve on this committee with Nancy, because both of us being on the newer end of directorships and just being allowed to serve with you guys for another 4 years, I think this is, and her and I both having a little bit of background with how the what's the word I'm looking for? Measures work on the ballots, because we've worked a couple of elections, so we're a little familiar with that end of it. I think it'd be good for two new directors to step in to something like this. We've got a long ways to go, and looks like my battery's dying. I better plug it in. So that was my ideas with going with Nancy. Yes, Spencer.
Yeah, please don't overlook the fact that Bob has got a tremendous amount of institutional knowledge with the district as far as what has happened in the past, and he can bring that to good use in this committee. So please consider that in making your decision, Madam President. But and me, like you, you know, we're reasonably new in it, and this is our, well, it'd be my second, but since our appointment to the board, it'll be our first time in actually bringing a tax to the voters and in front of the voters. So please consider that when you make your decision, ma'am.
Okay. Pete, I think I want to discuss something with you. We'll have to take a break or something. I'd like to come back to this item. Can we pull it off of the consent calendar, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, so are we going to move forward with, yes, John?
So I'll move to approve the consent calendar, leaving item G off the consent calendar to be reviewed later.
Sir,
I will second
that. I had already seconded the previous motion, so I will second the motion.
Okay.
I retract my second.
Give me one moment while I just jot this down. Okay, so it's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to amend the original motion to approve the consent calendar, to being amended to approve the consent calendar with the removal of item G for later consideration. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The amended motion carries unanimously.
I have a really quick question. Were we supposed to get some kind of plug with this to charge our, or is this our charging thing?
That's your charger. It goes on the side.
It goes in the side. It goes in the slot on the side.
Goes in the slot on the side. I looked for that yesterday.
On the right side, just above. Just above.
That was beautiful.
I think I'm pretty proud of myself. I actually figured that one out on my own.
Well, good for you. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Be excited. Mm-hmm.
I was looking at that myself going, what the heck does this do?
How do I plug that in? It's not going in anywhere. Okay.
I'm so proud of our board members.
Oh, we figured it out. Da, 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 da. Okay, so let me try to get back to you guys. I don't know where you went.
I just have one quick question about G. It will come to the full board for a vote, whether we're going to be in on that, right?
G. I don't think so.
For the committee?
Concept to join in the JPA, we would have to have the full board.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. To join the JPA. I'm sorry. I'm good with that then.
Okay. I'm going to get out real quick and get back in since I can't seem to find what happened. So I'll be right back.
Hear you.
From our end, everything is fine with you. We see you. We hear you.
But I can't see you guys. What am I looking at here? Hold on. Let me close that. Close that.
Up in the very left corner where the little eye is, make you have the gallery thing.
No, the whole screen. I'm at the sign-in screen.
Do alt
oh, there we are. Yay. Okay. Hello. I'm back. Thank you guys.
Excellent. All right.
Okay. Okay. Back to the agenda. Item 5, old business. And we are fortunate. Hey, Pete,
these surfaces are way cool, dude.
Yeah, dude. Mm-hmm.
Wait, I have a different question. Are we taking, is item G being completely removed from this agenda for consideration? Or did it get moved to somewhere else?
No, I wanted to talk to Pete for a minute separately from the meeting. I don't know how we do that during a break, I guess.
So it's just being moved to be considered later in the agenda?
Yes, yeah. Please. Thank you. Not having any experience on what happens with this, I don't want to go forward without knowing what's supposed to happen. Okay, so item 6A. Consideration of approval to join the county fire and other fire agencies throughout the county to develop a joint powers authority or other mechanism to solidify and enhance the fire services, collaborate and share resources, assist in a united public information campaign regarding a fire ballot measure, and share in the related election costs.
I will introduce this, and I want to let you know right off the bat that we've been in constant communication with legal counsel on this matter, just because they are intimately involved in the with county council and also the city attorney for the city of Sonora in the review and development of right now they're looking at the memorandum of understanding the joint powers authority for fire, and whether that can occur and how it would be structured. And also the fire chiefs are working on a parallel track. So you've got the staff working on a parallel track and you've got the attorneys working on another, and hopefully coming together with something that people can support. Council also wanted me to make sure that the board understood that they've been working on something similar in San Joaquin County for years and have been unable to get to the end of it and come to agreement on even a joint powers authority. So let's not think that just saying this means that we're going to get anywhere with this. We've already talked about this. We've already given direction at the last regular meeting to proceed with this type of arrangement, but the county has put out this format of a letter that they'd like to see all of the districts take action on. Again, it doesn't commit us to any particular course of action, and I want to make that clear. If it winds up not being a JPA, so be it. If it winds up being a JPA that we don't support, so be it. There's no obligation at this point to blindly approve something that has not yet been developed. Okay, so that's extremely important to understand, is that all you're doing is providing, the main thing here was that some of the other districts were hung up on election expense. How much is it gonna cost us for the election? And so I've done an estimate of what that cost might be based on information that was given to us by the county, and also caution that the number of voters might go up. So these are the number of registered voters in the Groveland Community Services District at 2102 today. Let's just say it remains at that. They've estimated the $5, somewhere between $4 and $6 per vote, and that's how that 10,510 was estimated. That's all it is an estimate. Could be more, could be less, could be much more, could be much less. That's just a number that we're using now to just give a representative idea of how the methodology might work. So at this point, we don't have that all worked out either. And then the next table that's included in here is the table that if it was, based on the parcel count provided by the tax collector, if the parcel tax were approved at the $150 level for developed parcels and $75 level for undeveloped, and some other items, we could expect approximately $552,579 in revenue from that measure. And so it makes up the majority of our estimated $600,000 per year revenue gap. So I believe that, there's nothing in the proposal that discusses either chiefs or that I've heard the county talk about or county council or our attorney that concerns me with any of this structure at this point. So I do encourage the board to approve this. We'll basically be sending this letter to the county Board of Supervisors so that they know that we're on board as a partner with this. And again, we're already actively working on the legal front and staff front.
So if I can, it looks to me like, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're actually sort of voting to approve here is to authorize or ratify the president to send this letter to the county. I mean, the letter that's attached contains all of the information, all of the language about what we're going to be doing. So what we're really voting on here is, yes, please send the letter to the county. Is that?
That's correct.
Approximately correct. In that case, I will move that we do.
I'll second it.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve to join with the county fire districts and other fire agencies throughout the county to develop a joint powers authority or other mechanism to solidify and enhance fire services, collaborate and share resources, assist in a unified public information campaign regarding a fire ballot measure, and share in the related election costs. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Did we get any public comment?
Did we need to ask for?
We did before we took the vote.
But I'd like to make a note that there's about 1,300 non-active voters in GCSD. I did some research on that a while back, and that's the number I got from the elections department.
Now, those 1,300 could be registered elsewhere in the state.
The way it was explained to me is they're non-active voters.
Okay, so they're registered with the county, but they're non-active.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so they're not people that own property and registered somewhere else. Okay.
Hey, Janice, I'd like to, I don't know whether we did open it up for public comment before the vote was taken.
No, we did not.
Okay, so I'd like to just take that into consideration. And if there is public comment that does change the board's view on this in any way, we should reconsider the item or re-agendize the item.
Yes.
Does it matter of procedure?
Yes, please. Jennifer, were there any comments?
There were no public comments.
Okay, is there anybody that's joined our meeting this morning that would like to comment? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Pete. Okay, moving on to, let me just set that one aside. Item B, adoption of a resolution approving an agreement with the NBS Financial for a development impact fee study.
It's 36-2020. I prepared a pretty detailed staff report on this, and they've got a proposal that's included. This was reviewed by the ad hoc committee that was charged with sitting in on this. It was a lot to review with 8 really excellent proposals. I mean, I was really pleased to see every single one of them. We had a very robust discussion with the committee, and you know, there were very varied views of which one was the right consultant. We all scored them, then we came to agreement on this recommendation. And Janice, or any of the committee members, or Jennifer, any comments are appreciated. But just in summary, this is the request for proposals that we put out to get a development impact fee study done. And this is where the consultant will establish appropriate water and sewer connection fees for us based on our capital improvement plan and master plans. They will also look at fire and park services and make recommendations on what fees should be charged to reflect the value of the improvements and facilities and equipment that are already in place. That new development is now when they build and when they are benefiting from these services that they've not paid for before, what is that value to that property? That's what this consultant does under the California state laws. And they have to create a relationship between the benefit of that and the property and what services received. And then they establish a fee. And then that for the park and fire fee, that impact fee has to go then to the county and be adopted by the county. And they charge it at the time that they issue a building permit. And then they give that money to us. The water and sewer connection fee, we charge in the office when someone makes a new connection because we have that permitting process in our office. But fire and park, there's no specific permitting process that we have when a new building permit is issued. So this would be charged by the county. And again, passed through to us. So these are consultants that have offered to provide that service and committee recommendation.
That was quite a detailed task that this committee was assigned. I know Spencer and I and Rachel, Jennifer and Pete were involved with this, and all of us read every RPG from cover to cover, scored the RPGs. Is it RPG or RFG?
It's both. Not an RFP, but we're reviewing proposals.
Yes. Then had a nice discussion on where we all ended up, and it was really interesting, and I'm glad I partake in it. Okay.
Just to be clear about this, I have one question, which is you just raised in my mind. Is there, on a new residential construction, which now requires sprinkler system, is that something that would be an additional feature? Because right now we just charge for the water connection. Do we have a separate meter for that?
I'll let Louis jump in here, but not normally. It used to be where it was a separate connection, but the technology has advanced in the methods of the sprinkler installation. Louis, you have input there?
Yes, you're correct on that, boss. It's usually it just goes through the main water meter for the sprinklers of their house, but if it's a standalone system for like a shop or a garage or a hangar, it will be a separate connection with an additional meter there. So, but usually they're tied in with the residential house meter.
It, with a larger meter than a normal?
Yeah, typically right now we're seeing a lot of 1-inch meters going out. And just they do the flow calculations by our hydrant pressures, our past ISO ratings and stuff, and they use that, and that's how they develop it. So
that's another thing that this consultant will look at is making sure that the amount that we charge for a connection fee for a 1-inch meter is accurately reflective of the difference in flow demand and flow potential from a standard 5/8 by 3/4 or 3/4 meter. So in other words, they'll look at that. Usually they use Waterworks standards that say a 5/8 by 3/4 meter can produce this amount, then 3/4 is this amount, and 1-inch is another amount. And then there's a proportional difference in those connection fees because they're purchasing capacity in the system.
Okay, my other question or just clarification is this, these development mitigate or impact fees would only apply to stuff that actually happens within the district, right?
Yes.
Doesn't do us any good as far as except for maybe being illustrative when we're talking about wanting to get something going with somebody outside the district. Having an analysis will probably be helpful because it gives us a baseline. It's just we don't have any.
You're correct, Bob. You're exactly right. We will make sure that it can serve as a baseline. And then there would be, for example, with fire, there would be it would be a baseline, and then there might be a time factor built into that number, if it's possible. So we would know if there was a an opportunity to enter into some type of an agreement with the county or directly with the developer or in a community facilities district creation, we would have that methodology. So you're right. It's very useful in that way too.
Okay, I'll move to approve resolution 36-2020 in agreement with NBS Financial for a development impact fee study in an amount not to exceed $42,000.
I'll second that.
Thank you, gentlemen. Or any comments from other directors? Any comments from the members of the public? No, yes, Spencer?
Yeah, just so everyone knows, there was no stone unturned on these RFPs. We discussed these at length, and I think and feel to this day that the one we chose to bring to the board was the best choice. So you guys, I think Bob, John, and Nancy, you guys would have been proud of that meeting because we were extremely thorough. So please understand that.
We trust you, Spence.
And would have expected no less.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay.
It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong, to approve Resolution 36-2020, an agreement with NBS Financial for a development impact fee study in an amount of not to exceed $40,000. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Did we get public comment on this? Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes, you did.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, now we're going to move on to item C. The adoption of a resolution approving agreement with Pacific Gas and Electric Company, PG&E, and authorizing execution of an easement grant deed related to the proposed permanent interconnection hub planned to be installed near Mary Lavoroni Park. And that is Resolution 37-2020.
Very ready to give an overview of this this exciting project. And we also, I can see that we have on the line, we have Hal Moore with PG&E, who is kind of the brainchild behind this thing and was our the first one that presented it to us back before the pandemic crisis, right before. And then we all went into hiding. But then also, I believe we have Brennan from a discussion that we had downtown with the business owners downtown regarding this project and their interest in this project as well. This is a project that again was a PG&E project that Hal can talk about in detail, whatever level of detail the board wants. And I just want to let you know that we've worked cooperatively through the financial evaluation, the logistics, the construction, any impacts, any co-location needs, any, I think to the nth degree, I probably wore poor Hal out on this thing, but Jen and I and Louie have spent a lot of time just making sure that we weren't committing to something that was going to create an impact and was going to be a benefit to the community. This is the project that allows PG&E to install permanent equipment on the lawn between the fire station and the existing Mary Lavoroni parking lot. That will be an exclusive easement dedicated for that use. There's a couple of photos in the documents that show the type of equipment that will be installed there, and that will remain in that location. Surrounded by some shrubs yet to be determined what type, but to shield those a little bit. But those pieces of equipment are important because in advance of a PSPS, it is the intention of PG&E to pull in some portable generators, park those in the non-exclusive easement area on the western end of the parking lot, and back those up in there, secure them with a temporary fence, connect them up to the infrastructure that's permanent there, and shut a couple of switches off in town and light up downtown during the PSPS. That is extremely significant. It means that the hotels don't have to try to rely on generators to keep the rooms occupied. It means that the fire station doesn't have to rely on its generator. All the retail and restaurants and other businesses that that have the that are connected to that system, that underground system, will in theory and in hopes have power throughout the PSPS. And so anyway, what the district is bringing to the table is we are authorizing the execution of grant deeds, where we are deeding the easement rights to PG&E of an exclusive easement, which means it is theirs for their use, and our access to it is extremely limited. And then non-exclusive use in the other areas, which means we'll co-locate, we'll be able to operate the parking lot, we'll be able to excavate and communicate about what we're doing. They'll have a ground grid in under the ground. And so it's a property transaction that we're doing with PG&E. In exchange, they're compensating us for that easement right. And that's pretty much about it. And Hal, I'll leave it to you to introduce yourself.
Hi. Thanks, Pete. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
So I appreciate that. And you, you know, you summed up the project very well. As Pete said, it's a program where we're looking at towns. Initially, it started with towns that are in the Tier 2, Tier 3 fire districts, much like Groveland. And, you know, Groveland's got the distinction that not an easy place to get in and out of because of the old Priest Bridge. And that's what originally drew us to the town and started the dialogue with Pete about getting some property. The one caveat or the one restriction on our program in the Tier 2 and Tier 3 areas is when a PSPS is called, well, what the plan is to energize an area of the grid when the grid has been deemed safe not to operate because of the PSPS. And so the restriction we have is, the current restriction we have is that that has to be underground. And so when you look at Groveland, and I just found out in working with our land people, it appears that underground section was done on a Rural 20 project in about 1990, where the underground section, about a mile of the town, was put underground. That was fortuitous for this situation. Had that not been done, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. So we are restricted to the devices and the facilities in your town that are in that, you know, kind of between the bank and the bank to the west and the end of the park to the east. We are making one extension of the underground to pick up your medical clinic and the ambulance service that are currently fed overhead. So we are, part of the project is also doing an expansion, because when we go to the towns like yours, we're trying to get fire departments. If there are most of these communities don't have hospitals, but a lot of them have clinics. And so we try to pick up the medical clinic, things like that. And then shared community services as pizza, whether it's hotel, restaurants, gas stations, things like that. So those are the type of services that we're trying to power during the PSPS. So that is the goal of the program. If we're successful at getting this easement that Pete's presented here, there are about three devices we have to install in the town in the distribution system. Part of that is that extension to the medical clinic and the ambulance service. We also need to put a new isolation device down on the east end of town. We haven't approached any land people yet because we don't know we have this deal with you folks. Once this is secured, then we'll approach people to get an easement to install that other device. I can tell you that once we signed a letter of intent to continue the discussions of this project, we have already spent engineering dollars and we essentially have the project engineered with the exception of that last isolation device. So we're we moved along in parallel with the technical piece of it while we're working on the commercial and the land piece.
I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
When you said that you were going out, one step back and including the medical office and the ambulance, that also includes the district office, correct? Or no?
You mean your office?
With the powering downtown?
Not our facility, Janice.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, your facilities are too far into the overhead structure.
Yeah, yes. Okay, next question is growth. If there is additional growth to the downtown area, as far as other buildings going up or something, there's future capacity to include them?
Yeah, so on these sites that we build, we typically have a standard design, and just in round numbers, the transformer we put in can handle about 2 megawatts of load. Right now, the safe to energize, what we call the polygon, and there's a PDET included it, and there's a drawing of the proposed microgrid polygon in the presentation. The load in that is well below 2 megawatts. So yes, if there were other infrastructure that went in on the underground system, we could pick up some additional load.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
Jeff, so you mentioned that there's one agreement you still have to reach with somebody to put in this final isolation device. Is that going to be a difficult negotiation? Who's the landowner?
There's several different spots, and we'll go with the easiest one first. And we believe we have one area that we believe is in the franchise, and the franchise is the area, I'm sure you folks know this because this is your business as well, but the franchise is the area along Highway 120 where down towards the intersection of Highway 120 and is it Ferretti Road? There are two overhead poles right now that's where the system transitions from underground to overhead. We need to put something just this side of those poles. Like I say, there's some franchise area between the highway and the motel down there. We could come back even farther than that if we had to, but that's the area we're looking at. If any of you know people in that area that would be amenable to the discussions, then I'm open to the input, but we're going to try to locate it in the franchise so we don't have to strike another agreement. There is one section of land that we could approach a private landowner about. We're hoping to be able to put it in the franchise.
You guys that are better at directions than me, so is that kind of that area where, like, prior to where the resiliency center would eventually be? Am I turning the right places with his description?
This is right across the street from the park, the end of the east end.
On the other side, okay.
Kind of across from between the library and the library would be on the north side, and the motel is on the south side.
So you lose me with that north and south and east. Yeah. And south.
Okay, Nancy, you can't be on the committee.
Tell me the park. Tell me the library. I'm in.
There you go. All right.
Can I ask real quick how the meeting went with the downtown business owners?
Oh, honestly, I think it was absolutely fantastic. There was a good understanding once we got done of what this was, and the questions were more related to how quickly could it get done because we're approaching fire season and we're they're all looking at investments and in generators because they don't want to have upset guests at this time with all we've been through over the last several months, and this is a great partnership, so they're very much appreciative, and we do have maybe one or two people on the line that can speak to that. But there was another question that came from that discussion about how possible is it to expand that area and what that process is and who the contacts are, because there were some that were really close to that polygon being the blue line on the map. And we have yet to resolve that, but I would say that, you know, those are things that we just have to work through. For example, if the district could get off of its generator system, or at least take some of the load off of its generator system by installing a service drop in some way, we would certainly want to take advantage of that. And there may be others. Hal, what is there?
Well, yeah, Pete, so you sent me that request, and you had three specific businesses. And so we'll have Pamela Perdue is our public safety specialist. David Meir, it works in GovRel, government relations. We'll have someone from that group work with you folks on once the design is 100% complete, we create what's called a SPID list, and that's a list of all the meters that are in versus out. And there's notifications when a PSPS is happening. There's a whole nother group that will notify all those SPIDs and say, okay, a PSPS is occurring. You know, you will experience an outage on the front end, then you should have power, and you'll experience a short outage on the back end when they transition during restoration back to normal power. So that list will get created and be communicated to you. I did take a quick look, and it does appear the post office, while it shows outside on that diagram gave you, it does appear the post office is off of one of the transformers on the underground. So I do believe the post office, don't call that 100%, but it's a high probability the post office is included.
Yeah, and for example, when you're running the install up to the clinic and ambulance building, there's a business that has just received a permit to do some concerts and other things that they may be interested in discussing connection to that segment because it goes right by their property as well. It sounds like those are details that can be worked out later.
Yeah, I'm focused. We're already into August. And so, I mean, when we started talking about this back in March, and the desire was to have this up and running, you know, September 1, obviously we're not going to make September 1 because it's August already. Even if we have a design, which we do, and we have purchased the equipment already, but we're not going to get this thing constructed in a couple of weeks. So if you're adding things to it, that's only going to delay the larger project. So if there's interest in other connections, that's something we'll just have to, we'll entertain that. And like I say, I'll put you in touch with the correct people.
Okay, do we have any other comments from or questions from the directors?
Yeah, hi. Hi, I'm not sure if y'all can hear me. This is Jen Edwards. I'm the owner of the Groveland Hotel. And I just wanted to jump in and say how much, you know, as a business owner downtown, we greatly appreciate you all working so hard on getting this done. We were hugely financially hit last year with the PSPSs, and my husband and I have been researching getting the generator at the hotel, which was in the, you know, $40,000 to $50,000 range. Hearing that saved money, especially given all the money we've lost in the COVID times, I just wanted to voice my support for it and say thank you very much for taking the time to do this, because it really is a big support for our community.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling. We do appreciate your comment, and I'm hoping and pretty positive that the rest of the community will also, business owners will feel that way, and I know that the community will feel that way, knowing that there's going to be things open downtown. Yes, Bob Asquith.
I wonder if this had any relation, or will this have any relationship to energizing the charging stations in the parking lot that are waiting to be energized.
This won't have any effect on that project getting completed. They're separate projects. I don't know what, honestly, I don't know what phase those are. They're in. I have seen what's called a work in progress bubble on our maps that shows there's something going in there, but I don't have any direct knowledge of that project, to be honest with you.
Do you know if it's serviced by this underground section? It's in the parking lot there by the youth center and
library.
I, And again, I'm gonna caveat this. I believe it is, but it's mapped in our GIS system, but it's not shown as installed. So I don't know where the connection's been made. There is a transformer at that end of the town that feeds the youth center down there, which is in just to the left of where these charging stations are. So I believe if that's picked up, I believe this will be as well. But again, I haven't seen where they made the final tie-in for those charging stations. But my understanding is at least the way it's mapped, it is being fed underground from the distribution system to those charging stations and that new transformer down there. So that bodes well, but again, I have to put an asterisk on that because I haven't seen where they actually did the tie-in.
Yeah, I was just wondering, it's been what, a little over a year while we're trying to get some there. It would be good to have those charging stations energized during an outage, then people could actually use their cars.
And again, that's one of the services we look for too in towns that have charging stations. Again, it's just a good shared community resource.
I'd rather use the post office actually.
Everybody has their favorites.
Yes, we do, don't we?
I'd rather your sewage facility ran.
I think we still have some public comment
potential. Yes. Any other members of the public like to speak on this?
Hello, folks. This is Brennan. I'm calling from Hotel Charlotte. We're one of the local business owners. And we also just wanted to express our support and echo the comments that were made by Groveland Hotel. This is extraordinarily wonderful to have some good positive news right now, especially after the challenges of this year and on the heels of having experienced the power outages last season, which were really devastating at the end of the season. This will allow us to better serve our guests, also our local community. And we're just so pleased with GCSD for taking these actions. So I just want to express our gratitude. I would also like to just identify that based on the initial presentation that we received from GCSD, it looks like there may be a couple local businesses that are just outside the boundary. It would be wonderful if there was some mechanism to be able to offer even above ground temporary generators to those businesses as well, so that the whole of our downtown can remain operational. So just want to put that out there as something to consider. And again, just express my gratitude that the district is working so closely with PG&E to move this project forward. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Quick question, is the area where the meat market is included in this?
Yeah. Marville Grocery Store?
No, I'm sorry.
It is. The Caldwell Center, the old Caldwell Center, yeah.
Okay. It'd be up next to the post office, that little meat
market. Yes, it would be included in.
Okay, wonderful. Okay.
I move to approve Resolution 37-2020, authorizing an agreement with Pacific Gas and Electric to approve, to authorize execution of easement grant deeds related to proposed permanent interconnection hub planned to be installed near Mary Lavaroni Park.
I'll second that.
Great. Thank you, Nancy.
A weird delay there.
All right. So been moved by Director Armstrong and seconded by Director Mora to approve Resolution 37-2020 authorizing an agreement with Pacific Company and authorizing execution of easement grant deeds related to the proposed permanent interconnection hub planned to be installed near Mary Lavaroni Park. I don't see any further public comments. Any last minute director comments?
Okay. When will this be done?
We gotta get these, well, so from this vote today, what will it take to get the easement signed? executed?
What's that? Oh, I'll have it signed today.
Okay, so it'll actually get executed today. Okay. Then I will go to work with my land person on this this East End isolation device, and then we can get it in the construction queue. I just can't give you a date right now. All I can tell you is as soon as possible. We've got the design done with the exception of that East End, and we got the equipment, so we want to get moving on this.
Will the park be electrified?
I guess I don't know what's in the park. I know the youth center, the fire department has picked up. What else?
The lights in the parking lot, any electrical outlets down inside the park?
I would assume those all come off. The lights are off the underground right there along the road. So I would assume those all be on.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
I would think if the library is going to be lighted, then the park is going to be lighted as well.
I was thinking because we had that set up last year in the parking lot for during the PSBS, PG&E came up and set up the tents for people to come in and cool off and charge and stuff. I wanted to make sure that that was going to be included again. So that's great.
Well, and Pete knows, there's a separate program for the community's centers that they put up. And I know last year PG&E did a lot of tents and parking lots. This year they're trying to transition to a hardscape approach where they use a local facility. And I know they've been talking about one of the churches, I thought down on Ferretti Street, about making that the community resource center. I don't know if those negotiations are complete or not. I'm really focused all my energy on the PAH project.
Yep, absolutely. It's nice to know that the public could go down into the parking lot and charge their phones if they needed to. But thank you for that.
And like I said, when we get the design done and when it's 100% complete, we'll have an SPID list created, and we'll share that with Pete. The government relations or the public affairs people will share that with Pete so that you folks know exactly what's in, what's out. And all I can say is, in this town, you've got your underground strip, and then on each side of it, you've got an overhead strip. And every town that I do one of these projects in, there, you don't want to call them winners and losers, but there's people that are in, there's people that are out, and it's just unfortunate. It's just the way the system is. And we'll pick up all the underground stuff will be picked up. That's the project for right now.
Yes, Nancy?
I just think this is like the coolest thing in the world. I mean, PG&E has to be like us. You get crap from every direction all the time. And it's just such a positive thing. And I went down, we have a generator, so I didn't need the PSPS last year, but I went down just to thought it was my director duty, to bring them cookies and food and check to see how things were going. And it was very, very well used and appreciated. So even if that's the best we have, it would be great if it happens again, but a hardscape building would be even 10 times better. So I just really appreciate everything that they're doing.
PSPS is, it's a lousy situation. And certainly when you're in the business of providing electricity, the last thing you want to do is not provide it. I mean, my whole career has been not with PG&E, but in the electric power generation industry. And so the thought of turning the power off is not something you appreciate. So if we do something to mitigate that, where maybe the power is off at people's houses, but they can go downtown and get something to eat, get some gas, bring some normalcy to a lousy situation, that's what this program is about.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's a good thing.
There's Jennifer. Okay.
Okay. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Hal, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. And like I say, Pete, we've been working on this. I can tell you, Pete went to bat for your community and to make this the best project within the area there by the fire department for the town. So we appreciate all the efforts and I'll go to work on, I'll tell Charlene that she'll expect something from you and I'll go to work on getting the rest of this done. Thank you very much for your time.
Yep. Charlene's already briefed me on exactly how it's supposed to go.
Okay. She's on top of it.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day, folks.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay. That was that's such a good thing. Like Nancy said, it's the coolest thing. Okay, item D, consideration of strategies related to reducing the district CalPERS unfunded liability.
Give me a moment.
Who's taking that one?
I will begin it.
And I'm okay. Sure
jump in. Sorry, I'm going through the copious amounts of PG&E. Look at my smell.
I had to do the same thing.
Okay. All right, so I tried to make the submittal as, you know, detailed without too much detail to kind of help the board. I know Bob Swan is very knowledgeable with regard to the PERS UAL that the district currently has, as well as, you know, pretty much every public California public agency that's part of the PERS system. So I guess, you know, with that said, like the submittal states that the district has an unfunded accrued liability, and that is due to the reasons that I listed in there, where the PERS was superfunded at one point, and then there was the passing of SB 400 and AB 616, which increased pension benefits retroactively. There were pension holidays where it allowed public agencies relief from making annual contributions. And then California experienced the dot-com boost in general. PERS lost its superfunded status. Then we hit the recession of 2008. And so the investments, return on investments for PERS has not been that good and it's been a trend over the last 20 years. So what that essentially means is that PERS has this, you know, an obligation to retirees. And right now that outstanding obligation that they owe is not funded. And because of that, and because they owe this obligation, they now bill the districts for the amount that the districts are underfunded, their share of what's underfunded for their people that are currently retired. And so right now the district receives its annual bill from PERS, and then it receives another bill for the unfunded accrued liability to start paying that down. And so with that said, the district's known about this. There's been a lot of, you know, you had the Pension Reform Act, which you have PEPRA to help address this. Even with the new GASB laws and the way things had to be reported on our financial statements to show really what the district owes as far as pension liability. So we were contacted by I call them CalMuni. It's the California Municipal Advisors, reached out to us, their firm, because they are a firm that helps with creative financial solutions for public agencies to help them, give them ideas on ways they can start addressing their unfunded accrued liability. They took the district's actuarial, which the presentation that I included in the submittal kind of goes through and if you have any questions, we can go through that. It was really detailed and a lot of information, but it really painted a good picture of the district specifically and the trend over the next 20 years. If we just stay the same.
Hey, Jen, can I just have you just hold on one second and I think a graph run in background and I can either share my screen or I can have everybody go to page 105. That is that graph that shows what we're paying today and what our actuarial evaluation estimates we will be paying through 2036. So it's a bar graph that shows green payments through 2020, which is where we are today. That's our estimated annual accrued liability payments that is contained in our budget for this year. And it shows the growth of that because of the underperformance of PERS and because of a variety of factors that are contained in that presentation. It shows it peaking in 2032 at $305,000 a year. So basically doubling what we're paying today just because of the underperformance history of PERS. And not, you know, it's not a given, it's not an absolute. It's just, this is what we have to include in our financial statements. Is this is basically a debt that we have, again, estimated to increase to over $304,000 in that year. And so, Jen, I didn't mean to interrupt your, I just thought it was really relevant to have this running in the background.
Yeah, no, thank you. That was really helpful. Like I said, it's kind of a lot of information. So I'm trying to, you know, capture for the board members who aren't really, you know, don't have a whole lot of knowledge on what the UAL is, in addition to what the district staff is asking for today. So like Pete did say, so this is what the firm presented to Pete and I. We sat down for a very nice meeting with them and they kind of explained, which a lot of it we kind of understood, but understood it a lot more. And especially the interest payment, which was something very new to me, the 7% interest rate that we pay. So again, this isn't something that district did. This is something that most agencies are in right now as a result of, you know, the investments not doing very well with PERS. And so one of the things that this firm proposes is to help, I mean, specifically it's to pay down our UAL, but it's to help save interest costs because right now we're paying 7% interest rate on our UAL. And so they had some means of helping the district to pay down the UAL, so in turn saving the total amount of out of pocket for interest, because on that slide you'll see that the total interest cost is $2.3 million over the span of this these years that they presented here for us. So one of the you know, they had a couple of things, like, so on the page 108 you have, we do the annual prepayment. So we do, the district already does that. So we do save a little bit of money there. New sources of revenue, refinancing, you know, taking a loan out at a lower interest rate, especially right now with the way that loan rates are, to pay PERS, the UAL down for PERS. If we had, which we don't really have, but if you had like land and assets and, you know, things that you could sell to help pay the UAL down. So essentially this meeting with them, and there's a lot more that they didn't include on this, but it really kind of interested Pete and I as a way of, you know, if there is a way for us to reduce the district's overall costs in by, you know, utilizing one of the methods that this firm either recommends or suggests, we're just really kind of, it was just interesting. And we'd like to, with the board's direction, get some permission to engage either this firm or another firm to start looking at ways that the district can potentially pay down its UAL and lower that total out-of-pocket cost specific to the interest that the district will pay.
Wow.
I know. Page 109 of the packet provides that same graph and shows the three options that we reviewed in detail, a 15, 20, and a 25-year payback on that if we were to refinance it. Basically, we pay it down. We don't pay it off because, again, it's all an estimate, but we would pay down the percentage of accrued liability. And this, you can see, for example, like with the option C, it pretty much keeps our payments about where they are today. Out for 25 years, there's an annual cost savings of $93,000. So in other words, if you added up what we would have paid if we did absolutely nothing, and if we extend that out at today's interest rate over that 25 years, there's a $93,000 a year savings. But if we jump up in the amount of payment and pay it off in 15 years, we don't pay the liability down as far. We're betting that CalPERS is going to do a better job at estimating the cost. We pay it down significantly, but we see also a cost savings of $304,000. Again, based on the estimates that we have today and the actuarial. And then option B, it looks pretty attractive there. That's a significant savings, but pays the liability down further and extends it out for 20 years. So those are things that we would look at with the board's direction and approval and come back with a more formal presentation and recommendation.
Yeah, this is the first time. I mean, the UAL has just kind of been this horrible growing monster for a lot of districts. And I mean, it was, it seemed like with the economy turning, things were getting a little bit better. But now with COVID, they even projected that now PERS may even have some type of COVID something for all the new losses that they're experiencing. And I don't think in the past the districts ever really thought that there was like ways or creative ways to do this. And at one point I thought PERS didn't even allow you to be able to fund this or had a mechanism for you to just dump a bunch of money on it because it is an ever evolving number. But it was just really, it was really interesting to learn that there could be some, by action taken on the district, that there could be some control over that total out-of-pocket liability. And I think that if there is a way for us to, it'd be responsible. It would be a responsible move for us to explore potential options to pay this down.
I think that'd be wonderful.
John?
Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's a good plan to look into this and take care of this. It's horrible the way this keeps growing.
There's, Jennifer, I kind of agree with you. It seems to me that they may have had a change of heart or something because the UAL has gotten so out of hand. There was a time when it was very difficult to pay, find a way to give PERS more money. we've never been able to pay off that damn safety. I mean, it took them a long time just to be able to start to run that down. I think it's, entirely reasonable to look at these alternatives. There are risks associated with taking on additional debt in order to do this. If there's another, catastrophe of some sort, I think there's a couple of cities that got into serious problems with, they had bond, pension bonds, right, to take care of their pension situation. And for one reason or another, were no longer able to service the bonds. So we want to be cautious about how much exposure that we give ourselves on this. But I think certainly it's a fine idea to look into the alternatives because CalPERS still hasn't reduced their damn discount rate down below 6.75% or something, which means they're still vastly overestimating their expected return, which means this will just continue.
Yes, and the advisors made that very clear to us as well, that it's even worse than it looks right now because of that.
Jennifer, I have a quick question. This is Ronnie. How do these advisors make money on this service? Who's paying the fee for their service? How does that work? Because nobody's doing anything for free.
No, I mean, the district, I don't know exactly the means, but the district would engage them in pay them in some form. Pete, you're nodding your head. So
yeah, it's a it's like a mortgage broker. They'll make fees. They'll get bond counsel will have their fees covered, and there will be a basically closing costs and other fees that are provided in more detail when we go into some type of an agreement, and mm-hmm. their costs are covered in that. Basically, we would be financing their cost into cash. It's not, you know, I mean, it's in looking at the total overall debt, it's not that much.
Yeah. You know. I was just curious how they were, who was coming in. Thank you.
Actually, I have one. This is a silly question, but looking at the, I don't know what page it is, the one that's the 6/30/2018 pension funding status. How can we have PEPRA safety? Yeah, can we have any accrued?
It's funny that you mentioned that, Bob, because I mentioned that as well, and I'm trying to get an answer from PERS because we dissolved our safety unit prior to PEPRA happening. So I don't know how we have a, unless it has something to do with the reserves. It may have been some type of residual from, because we didn't let go of the reserve program until after.
I mean, it's not much money. I just, you know, we terminated the safety program, you know, long before PEPRA went into effect, years before.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that, you know, PEPRA, it's funny that we just have a UAL on PEPRA already. Like, it was supposed to, you know, the reform, and now you've got a UAL on what was supposed to help, you know, fix and do pension reform. So.
Well, it is. I mean, as long as they continue to keep the discount rate close to 7%, that's going to keep happening.
It's really interesting because early on in my career was a time when CalPERS was super funded. As a public agency and as a manager, I thought it was just absolutely fantastic that we did not have to make any contributions to PERS whatsoever for the entire time that I was with a district in Siskiyou County. It was, we didn't make any contributions at all. Basically the employees didn't pay, the district didn't pay. It was, I thought, gosh, this is a great program, but understanding that the reason was CalPERS was making a lot of money on their investments at the time. The economy was growing and things were going well for them. And also, then there came a period of time during that growth that everybody's retirement went bananas. You know, you had the safety at 50 come in and everybody jumping into those kind of things because there was all sorts of money to throw at it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it crashed. So there were a lot of factors that came into play here. And unfortunately there's just no way around it. If we don't address it, it costs future generations much more money than some of them.
Yeah, $2,618,000 is the unfunded portion.
It's just for the miscellaneous plan. There's also that residual safety plan that we've been trying to pay off ever since we stopped having a safety.
Okay, are we ready to vote on this, you guys? I'll make a motion that we approve to direct staff to work with Cal Muni advisors and or other firms to explore ways the district can reduce its overall CalPERS unfunded accrued liability expense.
I'll second that motion.
Good idea.
We have two members of the public still.
Yes, members of the. Oh, I don't see anybody else on here.
Well, we have Ronnie.
Oh, Bob Asquith and Ronnie.
Yeah.
We have any comments regarding? Yes, Bob, I see you. Okay.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Edwards, to direct staff to work with Cal Muni advisors and or other firm to explore ways the district can reduce its overall CalPERS unfunded accrued liability expense. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, item E, page 114, authorization for use of the Mary Lavoroni Park as a drive-through chili pickup location for the Chamber of Commerce Chili Cook-Off Fundraiser.
Okay, so I see that we have Kathleen with us today, so I'll just kind of do a really brief overview and I'll let her take it from there, but she has reached out to the Chamber of Commerce with an alternative for, you know, in lieu of the cancellation of the annual 49er Festival and Chili Cook-Off this year. And she has reached out to the district because they would like to potentially, the chamber, if this goes forward, to use the park as a chili pickup station for this fundraiser. And so the district staff fully supports this. And it's our recommendation that the board allow it, but I will go ahead and let Ms. Half speak a little bit more to it.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's still 1 minute before noon. I was helping them brainstorm ways that they could still have some form of the 49er Festival without it actually being a festival, and some kind of a fundraiser also, so they don't start with zero money for next year, and hopefully the conditions will be much better next year. So I've been helping with troubleshooting all the different things that have to happen to coordinate this, and I think at this point we'd look for the schools to possibly be the locations where different chili, I call them chili meisters, but the chili cookers would be working in shifts where they would be by themselves and having a kitchen, a certified kitchen to work in, and then a place to refrigerate. But the schools can't do it because of their insurance. JPA won't allow anybody other than school personnel on the facility. So I think they're at the point of seeing if they can use the Groveland Community Hall for that and just have three shifts rather than possibly six different people participating. So that remains to be seen. But if they can use that facility and have three different chili meisters cooking their chilies, then they would do some kind of an online deal where people would sign up to get the three different kinds of chili that they would be getting. They'd pay for it online. The chili would be cooked on a Saturday before the actual, when the event was supposed to take place. I think they're still going to do a virtual event on the, was it 19th or something like that? So they would be cooking the chili on the 12th, refrigerating it overnight, packaging it on the 13, whatever size containers. It would be cold chili that people would drive through and pick up, but it would already be paid for, and people would sign up for 15-minute increments like 1:15, 1:30, 1:45, whatever, to pick up so many cars per 15 minutes to drive through Mary Lavoroni Park, and whatever whether it be upper or lower, that would be up to you, but there's a way of driving through and not holding up traffic and having them leave. And so when they pick up their chili that's already paid for, there'll also be a slip in it where they can put their chili when they taste it when they get home and heat it all up. So I thought that was a way of doing it, allowing the community to participate somehow. And so there's still a few more links to be satisfied to make this happen. But of course, it would need to have some kind of pickup location where it wouldn't hold things up. And so that was the idea.
I think it's like, I was so impressed. What a novel, thinking outside of the box way to do something with it. I thought it was fabulous. My only concern was, okay, like how well are people going to adhere to that little 15-minute schedule, or is that seems like a long time? Because depending on how many people do it, and then getting back on and off 120, I kind of wondered if, you know, like if the school parking lots would be better, or out at the airport would be better, or some, you know, something that, you know, that was my only concern. Other than that, otherwise, I think it's a fabulous idea.
Well, I don't think my recommendation wouldn't be, I don't know how they're going to do it, but I was seeing within a 15-minute increment period, no more than 10 cars go through. So you have some time, and you're going to have people that, oh, I missed my time, can I come through now? You know, that kind of thing. But the pickup will be quick because all the, there'll be people handing out the chili, and they'll have everybody that's paid for their chili. They just check them off and give it, and off they go. So it'll be real quick as far as the pickup goes.
I guess my thought is that what might not be quick is trying to make a left-hand turn exiting park onto 120.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities of the chili cookery people, I forgot what you called them.
Chili Meisters.
Yes, Chili Meisters, just cooking the chili from home, or their fire department office, kitchen, or the whoever's involved.
That would be up to environmental health, and I don't know where they sit on that. I've already talked to Rob Koslevy, and he said that it's important that they have their, I forget what you call it, but you know, there's a certification you get when you're a food server.
Right.
And so they, all the people that would be involved in cooking, and Bob Turney's involved in getting those people lined up if there is a place to cook. So that would be up to environmental health to say that's okay. And I didn't even go there with Rob on that.
I know you could cook from home now and sell to the public, so.
You have to have a special permit to do that, to be able to cook from home. I know my aunt, she's like a pastry chef, so it's a special permit you have to have. I don't know what's involved in it, or if there's an inspection, or how that it goes about for just somebody, or if they even have temporary ones. But I know the public health, just in the past and participating in the chili cook-off, they're very, very, very strict about the food preparation, not having it in your own personal home. You have to have a commercial kitchen. So.
Well, when they've done it in the park, how does that work? That's not a commercial kitchen.
So everything has to be prepared there, and there's a bunch of rules, and the inspector comes by in the morning, and they test your temperature, they test your this, they check all of your stuff. So it's, yeah.
Okay.
And I think Bob had lined up also, what's her name? I think it's Karen Seals. Is that right? From the school. She's the cafeteria person. To help out, possibly. I don't know if that was connected with if the school was going to be a site, that she would be a person to help with the checking also. But they'd still have to have their food preparation license or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Any other comments from anybody? Members of the public, would you like to comment on this? Okay.
I'm just going to move to authorize the use of Mary Lapparone Park as a drive-through chili pickup location for the Chamber of Commerce chili fundraiser, should it actually take place. I think it's fine. I'm fine with the park being used for this thing. I think that's probably the least complicated bit you're working on.
I'll second it.
Okay, no other comments from anybody? Jennifer, were there any public?
No.
No, okay.
So it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to authorize the use of Mary Lavaroni Park as a drive-through chili pickup location for the Chamber of Commerce Chili Cook-Off fundraiser, should it happen. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Sorry, you caught me yawning. Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Too well thought out to not approve. Aye.
Director Swan.
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Did you guys have a preference to whether you wanted the lower portion used or the upper?
I think The lower portion, you would only be able to come go in and out in one way, and I think that would be a little bit difficult because the only other way out is through the fire department, and they can't go that way. So I think there are some logistical challenges with the use of the lower park as far as, you know, going in and out. But that's not to say that it's not possible, and that it would be helpful with Highway 120 traffic. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's just the driveway on the side there going down to the gate next to the fire department. But if hopefully PG&E is constructing at that time and the upper parking lot is disrupted, then that may be the only alternative.
They could pick it up at the district office parking lot.
Bob asked, "With are you?"
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, what hours were you looking at? There are three Yards buses that come through there in the morning and three Yards buses that come through there in the afternoon. We could figure out something else for them, but we'll need to figure that out in advance.
It would be after Sunday afternoon, the 13th, probably early afternoon.
Okay, so the three Yards buses are like 8, 9, and 10 in the morning, and then their return is in the late afternoon. So it might run afoul of that. Well, I mean, I'm happy to work with them and you guys to make sure it doesn't happen. But if they've got a load of passengers, that presents a little bit of a problem.
There's no other 49er virtual events happening that day, correct? So then maybe they could start pickup at noon.
Yeah, it's just a question of packaging after the products have been cooled. And then packaging up in the individual containers and marking them and then bagging them, getting them all ready. And then a certain amount would be brought maybe in marine ice chests at a time. And then more would be brought, you know, so that they continue to stay at a safe temperature.
Yes, Nancy.
Kathleen, just whoever you're working with on this, feel free to give them my name if they just need more volunteers to help with either the packaging or the directing traffic through the parking lot or whatever. I'd be glad to help.
Great. You have to wear an orange vest, Nancy.
There you go.
We've got plenty.
So the first Yards bus on the return does not arrive until 5:30 in the evening.
That's not going to be a problem.
Chili would be pretty cold by then.
Cool.
It's going to be cold to start on Sunday, isn't it? Because didn't I read where you take it home and you heat it up, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be cold, yeah.
Just leave it outside for 10 minutes.
Yeah, once it's cooked, it doesn't have to be iced. Well,
if you haven't already, you might want to consider talking to Stitches about their parking lot just in case our parking lot is disrupted because of PG&E.
Yes. Spencer, do you want to say something or are you just stretching? Okay. Okay, on to item F. Adoption of a resolution awarding contract to the FAR Construction, lowest bidder for the Second Garrett and Big Creek Clearwell Rehabilitation Project.
I'm off of mute. Good. this is exciting to be able to let you know that this grant-funded project is still moving forward. We received four qualified bids for the project after the lengthy bid period, and we have analyzed those bids, and we have determined that for construction is a qualified and responsible bidder that submitted a bid that was responsive to the request for bids, and meaning that they have experience, they have qualifications, they have proper licensing, and that they submitted an appropriate bid. So I would certainly recommend that we do award the construction contract. The one thing I want to make you aware of is that the bids came in significantly higher than the engineer's estimate. which significantly reduces the amount of contingency that we had available for this project. And also we still have engineering and inspection costs and other things coming up that are non-construction, but are expenses on the project. So we have been in communication with the State Water Board folks. These funding programs provide for a maximum of $5 million. We are at $3.2 million in this, $3.4 million in this particular grant. And so we are requesting that they increase that award to $3.9 million. We had preliminary confirmation that that would be an appropriate request based on the bids. But it would delay our ability to be able to issue a notice to proceed. We can still authorize, with the board's action, we can authorize a notice of award, we can execute the contract, we can get all of those things together, but we can't allow them to start construction until we have approval from the state of our budget. And if they, even if they don't approve the increase in the grant, we're still going to proceed with the project. We unfortunately we would have to fund it out of our our fund balance, you know, and if there were a lot of problems with the interior structure, which we don't know about now until they get in there and lost it and got it, that could throw us over the budget. So that's why we're looking for that increase. So that's just a disclosure that doesn't affect our recommendation to award the contract, but really exciting to move forward with this large of a project, and it would be great to get that grant increased to 3.9, so we have some room to address any concerns. So, with your action.
Sounds good. Been working on that a long time, huh, Pete?
Well, I have been since I got here. But John Sterling was working on it before, and Alfonso, you know, for a couple years before that. Getting the inspection.
This has been a long time.
Yeah,
it was getting the grant was a big deal.
Oh yeah.
We have to do the project. There's no question about that. And if you don't have some disqualifying factor on FAR construction, we are pretty well obligated to award the contract to them. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I will move to approve resolution 38-2020, awarding a contract to FAR construction, the lowest bidder for the Second Garrote and Big Creek Clearwell Rehabilitation Project.
I'll second that.
Any comments from anyone else? Directors, members of the public, any comments?
Yay.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve resolution 38-2020, awarding a contract to FAR Construction, the lowest bidder for the Second Garrote and Big Creek Clearwell Rehabilitation Project. I'll now call for the vote. Director Krakowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes, sorry about that.
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Okay, thank you everybody. Pete, can we take a 5-minute break? I'd like to talk to Pete real quick.
And then reconvene to address the consent item.
For item 4G, yes. Is that okay with everyone? Okay, we will take a break. It is 12:15. Everybody, stretch your legs. Thank you very much. Okay, welcome back, everybody. It is 12:22. We are done with our little break, and I had a little chat with Pete. And hold on for just a second. I want to read something really quick. Okay, here we go. We are on item 4G, the formation of a committee to work with management in the development of a countywide joint powers authority for fire services and upcoming planned fire funding measure. This would be a standing committee, and I would like to join this. I would like Bob to join me on this committee. I appreciate your depth of knowledge, and I believe it would be quite helpful. And considering most of the meetings are virtual these days, I don't believe there's going to be an, I was concerned with other issues. So I think it would be fine. So if you'd like to join me on that committee, Bob.
Certainly, I sure would.
Hey. Okay, so anybody have any comments on this? Or this is just a consent thing, we're just going to agree to it? Or how does it work?
I would say separate action, just because it was pulled from the grouped action in the consent calendar and set out separately. So actual separate action on it. And again, the intent was to also have this on the agenda each month as this goes forward to have a, you know, so that the full board is involved in the discussions, if there's any action during that month of the committee.
Do we have a name for this committee?
Ooh, I get to make up a name?
Probably with some slight restrictions.
I can put you on that. I want it to be something really good.
No, you can't call it that, but other than that, you can make up a name, yes.
Okay, I'll make something up and let you know, Jennifer.
Fire service and fire funding and let's see, fire service enhancement and funding committee. How's that?
It's too long.
Unless you can make that into an acronym, you know,
like you gotta acronym that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so we're gonna. Any other comments on this by anybody else? Did I already ask? Any members of the public like to comment on this? No. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Jennifer, did you want to call for the vote?
I don't believe we've had a...
Oh, we haven't had a motion.
I move that we form the fire funding committee with President Kwiatkowski and Director Swan as members of the standing committee as indicated in item agenda item 6F.
6G.
I'm sorry, 6G. Thank you, John.
4G. Well, yeah, 6G.
4G.
Well, it was 4G.
4G, 5G, 6G.
The fire funding committee.
I'll second it.
Thank you.
Thanks, so, John.
Just for clarification, this is being formed as a standing committee. It's not an ad hoc that's going into a...
Correct, a standing committee.
So, the committee will have to set their meeting dates regularly, mm-hmm. and there will be minutes for it as well. So just as a make that note on the record.
It's minutes, but it doesn't have to be a predetermined schedule.
It does.
Well, we'll have to get guidance on that because there's two different schools of thought. It used to be that standing committees would have a standing specific schedule, mm-hmm. and that, you know, it, but the other school of thought is any committee that continues to meet on subject matter and jurisdiction, you know, within the subject matter and jurisdiction of the district about things like budget or finance or services, is a standing committee subject to standing committee requirements for the 72-hour notice and all that, but they may not have an established schedule. So that I don't know whether that's changed over time or whether that's just, you know, an interpretation issue or what, but we can resolve that. I absolutely can't have it as an ad hoc if it's gonna ongo like this, you know, but setting a regular meeting schedule is absolutely not desirable by me.
Pete, It's the my understanding is that the scheduling for a standing committee is exactly the same as the board itself. We have to have some kind of regular meetings, but it could just be one regular meeting a year, and everything else could be a special meeting. Mm. I mean, it, you know, but there we are. It's just the same as the board.
Oh.
Mm. I don't know. I've never said.
But that doesn't mean you have to have a, you don't have to have a monthly meeting or a weekly meeting or every 2 months meeting or even an every. You can SDRMA being an example. You know, we have six meetings a year, six regular meetings a year, and they're just at certain arbitrary dates. I mean, you can visualize that out a little ways in the future, but you can always have a special meeting, 24 hours notice.
That is my understanding as well. So I will research that.
We should probably pick one or two days, you know, have a meeting and pick one or two days to say, these are going to be the regular meetings as far as we can envision it. Cause it's nice to give people a little advance notice in case we want to have public participation.
Mm-hmm. How does that work? How does this work with the other countywide joint powers?
It doesn't at all.
Okay.
Because we could have a we'll be doing the majority of the business by special meetings, which is a little bit deceiving, I think. We can do regular meetings, but I think they're going to be a disruption because we'll have a regular meeting because we've said we're going to have a regular meeting, and then we'll have a special meeting because we really need to have a special meeting, you know. We'll just have to come up with some way to make that whole thing.
I mean, you know, we could seriously. Why? I mean, there isn't any advantage in terms of scheduling to have a standing committee, as opposed to an ad hoc committee.
Other than this is a longer term commitment.
Well, the concept of an ad hoc committee is that it exists for the duration of accomplishing some specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
The specific thing is to get
the fire,
to some kind of funding measure on the ballot.
Okay. My only concern with if we conduct it, I mean, if we conduct it as an ad hoc, but we do issue agendas in advance and do public notice in advance, that is, I don't know. It's kind of mixing the lines a little bit. That's what I'd like to do. I would love to have it as an ad hoc where it could meet informally. If it wanted to go to the fire chief committee meeting, it could. If it wanted to, you know, meet offsite or meet it, you know, on a different schedule, that would be the best and most functional way to make it happen. But because of the nature of this, I don't want to have anybody say, you guys did all this behind closed doors. You know, this is a really sensitive matter dealing with the fire services and then the funding and all of this. And even though it's going to be on the board's agenda, a regular meeting agenda every month, it's still, I guess we don't need to belabor it. We can just form an ad hoc committee, and if we need to transition it to a standing committee because of legal counsel guidance, then we will. And we can establish a schedule as well.
Okay.
If needed. Does that work for you, Bob?
Well, yeah, I think the nature of this is going to probably require a lot of quick scheduling to respond to other agencies. I mean, it's part of the issue here is what we just need to do is do what we don't normally do with ad hoc committees and take minutes and publish things, and give advance notice whenever it's possible. I mean, I think that's probably the most flexible approach. And it's, you know, if we want to, we want to be transparent about it. And so we can, there's nothing preventing us from doing that as an ad hoc committee. We just historically haven't bothered to because nobody really cared.
Well, I don't want to start doing something and set a precedent and then someone requests that we continue with all ad hoc committees by taking minutes. So let's let Pete talk to council and decide for us what.
Right.
Yeah, just to. Is that okay, Pete?
Yeah, well, for so ad hoc with a the termination of it being when the action related to a joint powers or some other vehicle is brought before the board and when the funding measure is considered final. I'll say approved by the voters, but.
Yes. Yeah.
Presented to the voters.
Yeah, presented to the voters. Yeah. Well, it'd be presented to the board, and once the board takes action, then the committee might be done then. At that point.
Okay.
Good. So, I move that we adjourn.
We need to redo this.
Hold on. This suspense. What's the status on CalNet?
Hang on, let's go back. Let's finish this action.
So we have,
oh, okay, I'm sorry.
It's been moved by Director Edwards and seconded by Director Armstrong for Director Kwiatkowski and Director Swan to serve on the fire funding committee. It was originally, the motion was for a standing, so do I need to have them amend the motion to an ad hoc? Or just, I'm not sure what we're doing.
It could be just a committee.
Just say committee because okay. the president can say which type of committee yeah. It is.
Okay. So moved by Director Edwards, seconded by Director Armstrong for Director Kwiatkowski and Director Swan to serve on the fire funding committee. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
One.
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously. And now we can adjourn.
Thank you, everybody.
Now I move that we adjourn.
Bye, Bob Asquith.
Actually, I had something to tell you.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to let the board know that Tuolumne County Transportation Council, TCTC, has received a grant of about $250,000 to do evacuation planning for those areas in the county that would find themselves in a situation like the town of Paradise.
Oh, wow.
The one that I think of is the town of Groveland. So it goes out to bid the next weeks, and by the time we get to fall, we'll be working on hiring a consultant and begin to have public meetings. So y'all might want to think about what you need in terms of evacuations, A, personally, but what does GCSD need? What do they need in terms of access back and forth to your facilities in the event of an evacuation necessity? So this is a state-funded grant, and you probably won't hear too much about it until fall, but we will be having public meetings, and I'm on the part of the organization that's going to be looking at the up-the-hill folks, us. So right now, preliminarily, all you can say is that there's no way out of Groveland Big Oak Flat that does not involve Highway 120, which is exactly, in fact, it's actually worse than Paradise. So there are probably about 15 or 20 other areas within the county, but we're one of the worst. So that'll be coming up, and y'all might want to talk about it amongst yourselves and figure out what things you need.
I'd like to suggest that we put this on the September agenda for some discussion, because I would certainly recommend that there be some type of allocation to the CERT program to purchase equipment that would be could be deployed or considered, at least considered within the evacuation planning, so that you know, signboards, electronic signboards, barricades, K-rail, whatever it might be that the CERT could assist with in that process. So that would be a good agenda item if you can participate, Bob.
Absolutely. And in fact, CERT regularly is involved with traffic congestion and traffic control in other parts of the county. So we can be doing that here. I'll send you a report about an incident that happened, by the way, in Twain Hart Fire Department, where CERT managed to save Twain Hart Fire Department about $3 or $4 million.
Oh my God.
Employing their aerial assets. They tracked down a fire that Cal Fire could not find, and Cal Fire was about ready to call out a big box response, which was well into the millions of dollars. And that won't take time now, but I'll send you a kind of a written report of that, and we can talk about it whenever you want.
Great.
Thank you, Bob. That's really, really really good news. Good news to hear, especially after going to that one Paradise meeting with the fire chief. Anybody? Well, we're still recording. Anybody else?
I don't know if you want to formally adjourn the meeting.
Yes.
John already did.
I know. Yeah. I'm in motion. I'll second it.
I will formally. Bye, Kathleen. Thanks for joining us today.
It's 12:41.
12:41. We're adjourned.